Welcome to the HR Chat Show, one of the world's most downloaded and shared podcasts designed for HR pros, talent execs, tech enthusiasts, and business leaders. For hundreds more episodes and what's new in the world of work, subscribe to the show, follow us on social media, and visit hrgazette.com.
Welcome to another episode of the HR Chat Show. Hello, listeners. This is your host today, Bill Banham. The world of work is evolving fast, and for HR talent and business leaders, it can feel like the rules are being rewritten in real time. AI is changing how we hire and how we work. Employee experiences are shifting. Employee well-being has become a board-level issue. And leadership, well, it's being tested in brand new ways. My guest today, for the first time on the show, is the awesome Danny Stacey, a future of work strategist who helps organizations make sense of change and turn it into clear, practical action. Danny spent more than a decade at LinkedIn and Indeed, where he led work in talent intelligence, market strategy, and global client advisory. Today, Danny's an independent consultant and speaker, known for his work on AI in the workplace, well-being, and the evolving people experience. Danny blends labor market data, behavioral insight, and sharp storytelling, and he's also an approved CPD provider supporting teams that want accredited learning. So in this conversation, we're going to explore what leaders are still underestimating, how HR can approach AI with confidence in 2026, what's gone wrong with well-being strategies, and one practical step organizations can take now to future-proof talent strategy for the years ahead. Gosh, that's a lot to cover in 20 minutes, Danny. How are you doing today?
Very good. I'm going to do my best for my sharp storytelling. Thanks for that intro, Bill.
Okay. Well, I guess we better get straight into it. In terms of what leaders are still underestimating, Danny, from your years at LinkedIn and Indeed, as I mentioned in the intro just a moment ago, what shifts in work hiring or employee expectations do you think leaders are still underestimating?
Yeah, a lot. I think the biggest thing leaders are still underestimating is just how fundamentally employee expectations have shifted and how quickly that's happened. So you've got expectations around flexibility and trust and purpose, and they've moved a lot faster than organizational systems have managed to keep up. And people are questioning not just where they work, but why and on what terms they're going to work. And a lot of organizations have made some sort of temporary changes during the pandemic and sort of quietly assumed things would probably revert back to how they were. And the gap between expectation and reality is kind of this major source now of frustration. And over the last few years, people have sort of reevaluated what work is in their lives. And that doesn't disappear just because the labor market gets a bit tighter. And what I see is a growing disconnect now between organizations and how they think, and then people and how they're supposed to behave. And I think that the disconnect just shows up as things like disengagement and burnout, and people are sort of quietly opting out. So it's not that leaders don't care, because they do. I hear it from them regularly. It's just that a lot are still underestimating how permanent these expectation shifts have sort of changed.
Well, good, very good. Thank you. So let's now talk about the new normal of hiring. What are you seeing right now, Danny, in talent markets that suggest that hiring is changing in a more permanent way, not just reacting to economic cycles?
Yeah, I think what's probably interesting right now is that hiring is slowing down in quite a few areas at the minute, but the expectations aren't sort of resetting in the same way. So you've got employers are hiring a lot more cautiously, and candidates are also a little bit more selective. So things like skills and adaptability and potential, from what I'm hearing, are outweighing the sort of more traditional credentials that I'd have expected in recruitment 20 years ago when I first got into it. And flexibility and culture, they remain real kind of key decision factors when roles are quite scarce, and people are prioritizing fit and sustainability over things like short-term opportunity. So I don't think it's just a reaction to economic cycles. I think some things have changed really structurally, and hiring is becoming a lot more intentional, probably on both sides. So employers want fewer and better hires, and candidates want fewer and better employers. And then that fundamentally changes how attraction and assessment and even retention work out. So the new normal, if I can use that term, is less about volume hiring. And I suppose it's just more about clarity and quality and long-term fit.
Hi, this is Ryan Komori, founder and CEO of Saverlining, a company dedicated to empowering teams to live more joyful, productive, and mentally fit lives. And we're a proud sponsor of this episode of the HR Chat Show. We exist to bridge a key activation gap for many out there who have not yet crossed the figurative mental health gap, while also teaching helpful skills that are not normally covered in weekly talk therapy sessions. Our goal is to help people everywhere become more aware of their own mental health and improve their mental fitness. Learn more about how we can help your employees at saverlining.com.
Okay. AI mindset in 2026 is next. You spend a lot of time helping organizations adopt AI safely and confidently. What is the most helpful mindset that HR and TA leaders can adopt when approaching AI in 2026? And I'm just going to correct myself with my question here. This idea of being able to adopt AI confidently. How confident do you think a lot of middle management actually is with AI? Because I'm hearing they're not.
No, you know, you mentioned middle management specifically there, and I think that is a challenge, and let's definitely talk about that today. I think the most helpful mindset across the board, not only for leaders but really for everyone, is that, you know, don't treat AI like a technology project. You know, you really need to treat it as a people decision, and it should be quite intrinsic to a lot of the other decisions you're making in your organization. So AI, it's here to augment human capability, not simply just increase our output, or it shouldn't be. And then that raises questions about fairness and trust and value, as it should. And we see the law starting to evolve around that. And then the time saved as well by AI, that creates this real tension about how that time is then going to be used. And I'm hearing this a lot more when I'm talking to business leaders. I do think leaders need to be really explicit about the expectations they have on their people. I keep hearing a few other podcasts, you know, not that I listen to many others. This is the most important one, Bill, but I've been hearing that this phrase, eat what you kill, a lot more recently when people are talking about AI. So if AI saves time, who keeps that time? Who keeps the kill? Is it the employee who gets space to rest and to learn or work on just cooler projects? Or is it the organization who are probably going to just expect higher output? And I think that question really matters, because if leaders don't answer it clearly, then people are probably just going to assume the worst. So that the mindset shift, it's less about, you know, what AI can do, and it's more about what kind of working relationship that we want to create with AI.
Okay, the genie is out of the bottle now. Yes, listeners, truth is there are other HR and related podcasts out there.
Sorry.
from our end, we do advertise a few of them on our Buzzsprout feed, which is the platform we use, and it distributes to Spotify and things. So just a shout out to a few that I like. A Bit of Optimism with Simon Sinek, I think that's a great one. FT News Briefing's pretty good, the HBR Idea Cast, the Wire Podcast, the Daily, Talent Culture. Many years ago we used to work with Megan and the team over there. That's a great pod. Anything that Enrique Rubio does is always worth a listen. What about you, Danny, other than the HR Chat Show? What do you listen to?
You know, most of the conversations I have tend to be at events. I'm just at so many events at the minute, which is great, and I love events. As someone who is not the most outgoing person typically, which you might surprise you, because I've spent a lot of time on really big stages around the world, but I am making more. I'm getting better at just going and starting at conversations with people I've never met before. And actually, that's probably where I'm learning the most at the minute. There will always be a wonderful space for podcasts, for sure. But I think, especially since my commute changed quite drastically with the pandemic. I probably spend less time on podcasts now and more time in the room with others and learning about their challenges. And Bill, we've had some great discussions leading up to this. That's the kind of stuff where I've really learned some cool stuff.
Okay, very good. I'm currently obsessed with the rest is politics, the rest is history, the rest is football. All great podcasts.
Yes. So,
I'd recommend those. You can't beat a bit of Gary Lineker. Let's talk about misconceptions about well-being. Many companies are struggling with employee well-being. From your research, Danny, and work with global organizations, what are the biggest misconceptions about well-being in the workplace today?
Yeah, I think the biggest misconceptions about well-being are that well-being is just about perks or it's just about happiness. And I think well-being actually is shaped by how work is designed, and it's influenced by workload and by trust and clarity and support and so many things. And benefits and initiatives, they're never going to compensate for poor systems, no matter how much money you spend on gym memberships for your people and the bean bags and the pool tables and all the rest of it. I think treating well-being as a program that often kind of backfires. And I've seen organizations investing quite heavily in well-being initiatives and ignoring the workload. So management quality, job design, if you don't think about those things, you're in for a tough time of it. And people become really cynical at the minute, especially when they hear the term well-being as well. And I think real well-being shows up in how work feels every day, not just what's kind of occasionally offered. So well-being isn't it's not a perk strategy, as a lot of people think. That is a misconception. It's genuinely an operating model.
Okay, I didn't know these people are getting cynical. I'm co-hosting an event on March 5th in Manchester with a well-being theme. Oops. By the way, listeners, if you're in the Manchester area, March 5th at Campfield, Central Manchester, we're doing a Disrupt there. And we've got the people director for Manchester United and Total Fitness and various other well-being related folks. So I don't know, if you like well-being, check it out. That's my shameless plug. Let's continue on. Let's talk about the leadership behavior that matters most, Danny. You've spoken on big stages and advised some of the world's largest companies. What is one leadership behavior that consistently makes the biggest positive difference to culture and performance? And as we like to do on this show sometimes, let's mix it up. I'm going to challenge you to answer in 60 seconds or less.
All right, you're on. Leadership behavior, Mansby. The ability to combine empathy with accountability. So leaders need to balance performance with humanity, and pressure moments reveal kind of cultural truth in organizations and behavior signals. I guess that is kind of what, when sacrifice is kind of expected in an organization, that's dangerous. You and I were speaking recently. Last year, I postponed a cancer operation to go and host a major work event. And then that forced me afterwards to really reflect on kind of what that leadership model should be, especially under pressure. I think that experience for me shaped how I think about empathetic resilience, which is kind of this term that I've coined. It's, we push through hard moments. That's fine. That's not going away. But we've got to be able to look back and fix those systems afterwards, the systems that made things hard in the first place. I think that combination is going to build trust and loyalty and sustainable performance. I'm not timing myself. How have I done? 60 seconds-ish?
Ish. I think you're pretty much on there. Danny, I just need to take a pause there and recognize you for being brave enough to speak about your health on the pod. I'm pleased that you're doing well.
Cancer free now. Yes. Touch wood. Yeah. Much better. Thank you, Bill.
What, how did that impact your ambitions for your career, your outlook? You were very much doing something completely different not that long ago to what you're doing now. I wonder if this was a moment for you which made you reflect and change what you wanted to do in the future.
Yeah, I think life, our career, there are a series of moments, and some will impact our lives more than others. I think with that particular moment or series of moments leading up to being diagnosed with cancer and then finding out that I was going to need to have a couple of operations, and then going through redundancy as well at Indeed, and even just simple things like, how am I going to pay for this really expensive operation when I no longer have work healthcare? All of these things, they do make you think about the world of work. And one of the things, my team were impacted around the same time. I don't know how much or how little I can share on this because it's a bit sensitive, but I will say I took my role as a leader in the business to ensure that they were all well aware that business is business. I found myself saying that quite a lot. And sometimes when we've been in a company for a long time, we start to, we use the term family all too often. Don't think we should do that. I think at the end of the day, we talk about a lot. We have life and we have our personal life and we have kind of our work environment, and we want people to be their true selves at work for sure. We do need to remember these are two very separate things, and we should think about working so that we can enjoy our life to the max rather than living to work. And I think that's one of the things I've really thought about, and I've taken that into my freelance consulting.
You know, I was having a conversation with somebody I've known for a number of years now, a guy I respect, and then he said something that kind of changed for me when he said, there are no friends in business. That actually irks me, because I can't get behind that. I think that you can treat others as you'd want to be treated. Yeah. And it's not necessarily all about trying to climb over other people to get to the top. And if you've got that attitude where, okay, sure, business is business, I respect what you're saying, but it doesn't mean that you need to behave in entirely different ways within the business environment, and you can't let people into your personal life. I don't 100%. Know if there's a question there. Maybe I'm just commenting. I'd love to get your take.
Well, yeah, and I wholeheartedly agree. I think when you look at high performing organizations and you talk about things like well-being and environments, it's not separate to performance either. So actually all the things you're talking about are smart business decisions. You should look after your people, because if you do, a lot of the research, certainly the research I've been involved in, shows that your business will perform better, share prices will be better, you'll hire better people, and people will stay longer. So actually, you're right. Although it's not only the right thing to do, and we should have friends at work. I'll murder the data if I try and I come up with it on the spot. But there's a lot of data that shows people who have a work bestie, a work best friend, are far more productive and far more loyal to that company. And one of the things I talk to HR leaders about genuinely is, how do you encourage your people to make friends at work? It's a really important part of the working environment.
Almost out of time already. I had a whole bunch more questions for you, but what are you going to do, right? We've got our format that our listeners like around 20 minutes. So just a couple more questions for you before we go. We are recording this conversation in mid-January, so early in 2026. Let's talk about one action for future-proofing 2026. For organizations looking ahead to the next 12 months, what is one practical action that they can take right now to future-proof their talent strategy?
Yeah, if I can only pick one, I think get really clear on your people principles before you start investing in technology, all these wonderful shiny tools that are around us at the minute, all these events you're going to, there's some beautiful tools and vendors out there. Just decide how's that change going to affect people, and be clear how AI gains that are coming in, how are they going to be shared? Who's going to eat the kill? Invest in your managers and their leadership capability. You called it out yourself. And consistency builds trust through uncertainty. So I suppose technology, it's going to keep changing faster and faster. But what lasts is how people feel, how they treated when change happens. And organizations that future-proof the best are really clear about what they stand for, and they're really consistent in how they act, especially when things get quite uncomfortable. So clarity is what turns disruption, I think, into advantage.
Okay, wonderful. And just finally, how can our listeners connect with you? Is that LinkedIn? Do you want to share your email? What other socials are you over? I bet you're all over all of them because you're super cool. Also, I'm assuming you want to direct people to dannystacey.com, the best website in the world. Tell us more.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah, I clearly am not very imaginative or creative because I've just named everything after me. So the website, Danny Stacey, there's no E in Stacey, dannystacey.com, email hello at DannyStacey.com. And if you type Danny Stacey or DannyStacey.com into LinkedIn, you'll find lots of cool stuff that I'm working on at the minute. Please reach out. There's never any pressure. There might not be any commercial opportunity at the end of it for me, but I'm more than happy to have a conversation about cool stuff people are working on and just bounce ideas back and forth for sure.
Yeah, my experience with listeners of Danny thus far is he's a lovely bloke, very authentic, and he's willing to help people. So do reach out to him, connect with him, and learn more. Danny, that just leaves me to say for today, we've still got to figure out a time to get you on stage at one of the events that I'm involved in. But for today, buddy, thank you very much for joining me.
Absolute pleasure, Bill. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, as always, until next time, happy working.
Thanks for listening to the HR Chat Show. If you enjoyed this episode, why not subscribe and listen to some of the hundreds of episodes published by HR Gazette? And remember, for what's new in the world of work, subscribe to the show, follow us on social media, and visit hrgazette.com.